Accession number 17370, Gaspar Arajanyan, Reel 5.
Arajanyan, Reel 5. Yes, you were saying about how you were going to gather
the restaurant. Yes, so we telephoned my chronicle, and he said, I'm coming to town, in any case I'll come and pick you up. So he came and took us to his restaurant, and there I saw a large number of people had gathered also, including Edward Woodward, the actor, and his wife and daughter were there, and several other people altogether, some, I think, 27 people. And we took some of the food stuff that we had there, and we saw that there was a huge table there. Everybody had done the same thing, so the flies were having a feast. It was all rotting. Anyhow, so we waited there, and several of us took turns listening to the forces radio to see what was being done, what was happening. And we got all the news from there. Then McGonagall noticed that the shelling was coming closer to where we were from the warships. So he telephoned the High Commission. He said, what's happening about the HMS Hermes was supposed to come and pick everybody up. Well, they said at the High Commission that the Turks were not allowing Hermes to approach the coast. So I said, what do I do? He said, I've got 27 people in my restaurant. Well, take them down to the shelter. He said, I haven't got a shelter. Oh, well, it's up to you. You decide what you think is appropriate. So he came down. He was up on the roof after speaking to the High Commission, went to see what was happening with the shelling. He came down. He said, I'm taking my family to the base at Dhekelia. Anybody wants to come with me, come along. So we said, we'll all go. There were seven cars all together. And we drove along the coastal road. And then we had to cross the mountains. There was a pass in the mountains, Lefkoniko Pass it was called. We were going from there. We were supposed to go straight to the Larnaca area where Dhekelia was. But we were stopped by some Greek soldiers. They said there's fighting going on in that village. It's dangerous, don't go. And also they told us there is a Turkish aircraft flying overhead. You better hide. Scatter and hide. Fortunately, there were many olive trees in that area, so we put the cars under the trees that were not visible from the sky. And the women and the children went under a culvert that was nearby. So we waited until we saw that the aircraft was no more. It gone. So we continued, but we couldn't go on the short way. We had to go down from Augusta way, and from there we went to Dhekelia. And at Dhekelia, we were met by the soldiers who greeted us, especially when they saw Edward Woodward, who was their favorite actor. And they put up a tent for us. We lied with a, give us, each one of us, two blankets, one to lie on and one to cover ourselves. But they were very good. They gave us refreshments, they gave us food and so on. And then Edward Woodward came to me and asked if I had anybody in England. He said there's a correspondent of the Daily Mail who's sending his report by a special plane tonight. So if you have a message, I said yes. So I gave my daughter's telephone number here, Sophie. She was living in this house. Because they didn't know what was happening to us. There were no telephone communications, nothing. And so that same night, Sophie got the message, and she was very pleased, because she was trying Foreign Office, she was trying the BBC, she was trying everywhere to find out if anybody knew about us. So she was very pleased. And well, we spent two or three nights, I think, in the tent. Two nights, I think, in the tent. Third night, they took us to barracks, where we had camp beds. And then they came around and asked if anybody wanted to go to England. We said, we'll have to go. What else can we do? I mean, we can't stay there forever. So since we can't go back to our house, and we have nobody in any other town of Cyprus, so our daughters were here, so we said, yes, we'll go. So they took us to Akrotiri, and from there they flew us in a Belfast transport plane, which was very smooth, very slow, and very noisy. But we arrived safe and sound, and then we got in touch. They asked us where we wanted to go. We said, go to London. So they brought us to London in a coach, and from there, Paddington Station, telephoned my daughter. It happened to be her birthday. So that's it. And since then we have been living here.
What were you able to bring with you? Because this was the second time you'd lost your home, wasn't it?
Yes. Well, we were not allowed to take more than a small suitcase. So it was summer. We had just pajama, a towel, and nothing else. Fortunately, I was able to bring some of my papers, but not everything. For example, my law diploma I left in the house. The medal, I had all valuable things. I had a coin collection, stamp collection, going back to the Ottoman period, in some of the old, very valuable stamps. It was all gone. A very big library, over 1,000 books, some of them antique values, not many, but a few antique books, including an old edition of Gibbon's Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire, and 8-volume annotated works of Shakespeare, 8 volumes, you know. Henry Irving edition. It was lovely. And about 50 Folio Society books, beautiful winding books. And and we have been here ever since. So
I believe you've worked with the Ministry of Defence eventually, Gaspar, is that right?
Yes.
What were you doing there? Was it sort of secret work?
Yes.
That you'd rather not talk about?
Well, it involves translation work. Well,
I suppose your languages would have been very useful,
yes,
is that right?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. I worked full-time for 4 years, and 4 more years part-time, twice a week, I think, I used to go. Sometimes when they needed me more, I used to go as well.
Well, what is the situation, you know, having left all your property in Cyprus, is there any chance of you retrieving it?
Well, what happened was, shortly after we arrived here, we received letters from the High Commission, British High Commission, asking us to complete some forms and giving all details of all the contents of the house. It wasn't easy to remember every little item and to put the value on each item, but we did our best and we sent in letters with all the lists. And we waited for several years. They kept telling us that they were approaching the Turkish authorities. They hadn't decided what to do, and eventually they said they were setting up a commission to deal with these claims. Then the commission was established, but it wasn't functioning. And then the chairman had resigned, they couldn't hold meetings and so on, and the years passed. At last they said now they have started functioning and they are dealing with the claims. And later I was told, and I was shown an extract from Hansard, a statement made by Minister of State, to the effect that the Turks had approved the payment of the making of ex gratia payments to some 335 British subjects who had lost some of their effects in Cyprus as a result of the Turkish invasion. And then I had a letter from the Foreign Office telling me that the Turks have decided that they cannot consider my claim for compensation because of my Armenian descent. This is how the letter was worded. Tim Egger was the parliamentary undersecretary of state at the time. He had the letters signed by him. So I kept writing, arguing, seeing our MP, Richard Lewis, here. A poor chap, he tried his best, but he couldn't go very far because the Foreign Office didn't seem too keen on doing anything. Then when I saw that there was not much hope of getting anything from the Turks through the British authorities, I said, well, let me try the Americans. I worked for them for over 22 years, and they are very good friends of the Turks. Perhaps they can persuade them to change their policy. After all, what they're doing is racial discrimination. And everybody talks that racial discrimination is bad, shouldn't practice it. So I consulted Mr. Lewis. He was still Mr. Lewis then. And he agreed. He said, yes, it would be a good idea. Write a letter to the Secretary of State. Schultz was then, George Schultz was the Secretary of State. So I addressed it to him, he said, through the American ambassador in London, give it to me, I'll pass it on to the ambassador with my views about it, he said, and it should be all right. So I sat down and wrote a very long letter explaining everything, and I addressed it to the Secretary of State through the ambassador, and I gave it to Lewis, and he passed it on. Then Luce sent me a letter he had received from the ambassador, in which he said clearly that he had passed on my letter to the Department of State. I waited for 6 months. There was nothing, no reply. So I spoke to Luce again, and I said, I'm going to write a reminder through the same channels, which I did, and he passed it on again to the ambassador. I waited for another 6 months. Again, nothing happened. Some of our old friends whom we knew in Kyrenia, they were Quakers. They were involved in the Palestine dispute. They were trying to bring about some peace between the Arabs and Jews. We became good friends, and we continued to correspond. They went back to the States, and they were interested. They kept asking us what was happening to our claim. Which I wrote and told them what had happened, and that could they please find out from the Department of State what was happening there. They said, send us copies of the correspondence. Again, I had made copies and sent to them. They said they had the Quakers had a representative in Washington who deals with matters of human rights, sort of the guardian of human rights or something. So they said they will ask him to make inquiries. So I sent the copies, and they passed on to this gentleman. And then they sent me copies of the letters they had received. He told them what to do, to whom to speak. They did. Eventually, the matter reached the State Department. And they sent me a letter by an undersecretary of the State Department in which he stated that there was no trace at all of my letters having been received at the embassy, although they were sent through the proper diplomatic channels. So, but in that letter he said he will get in touch with the American ambassador in Nicosia and will contact the British authorities too and see what can be done. And that he will write to me directly and telling me what has happened. That's all very nice. So I took that letter to Schultz, to Luce. I was surprised. He said, how is it possible to go through proper channels? So he made a photocopy of that letter. And he went to the American Embassy in London to find out how is it possible that letters can get lost. At the American Embassy, there was no trace of the file. The whole file had disappeared. So the only hope that remained was that undersecretary. I waited for some news from him. He said he was going to write to me. Nothing came. I sent him a reminder. Again, nothing. Then I had been communicating with the head of the Foreign Broadcast Information Service, who was the head of the bureau in Cyprus when I retired. We continue to correspond. We still do. And he was interested. He asked me what was happening. I told him. I said, could you please try to find out what's happening? He said, I'm passing the correspondence to the director of Foreign Broadcast Information Service, to the man who's in charge of all the bureaus all over the world. And he can communicate with the Department of State. because he's partly connected with, I mean, his office is partly connected with it. He said he's going to make inquiries and he will let you know what the position is. But he added a proviso. He said he is reluctant to pass on bad news for you. I have never heard from him. Obviously, he had bad news, which he didn't want to communicate to me. So that's where we are now.
And did you manage to sell your house?
When I think it was early 70s, 1970, I think it was, we went to visit Astrid's mother in Haifa, and we stopped for a couple of days in Nicosia, in Cyprus. We met some of our old friends, some of English friends. There was Mrs. Harris, was a very good friend who had been in Palestine. And we met Charles Gray, who was with me, a member of the United Kingdom Citizens Association. He was retired. He was a very charming person. He asked me whether I would like to sell the house. I said, yes, if you can find a buyer, because I knew that I couldn't expect much from the Turks. So I said, anything I can get for it, I would. So he said, they will try to find a buyer. Anyhow, we went to Haifa, and then we came back to England. And he wrote to me that he has found a buyer. Would I sell it? I said, yes, I would sell it, provided the money is paid here in England. It was arranged, and the money was paid here. So I sent a power of attorney to him to effect the transfer. And he appointed a lawyer there, whom we knew, and we were good friends with that lawyer. He was a Maronite. And I signed the acknowledgement of the money. And then the two lawyers went to the land registry, the Turkish land registry, to effect the transfer. Land registrar said he had instructions not to approve the sale of any Armenian property, so he was not able to register the transfer. What do they do? The two lawyers thought of resorting to a subterfuge. They pretended that I had received the money but was refusing to transfer the property. So the buyer applied to the court for an order of specific performance and said, we have paid the money here, we have a receipt, and he's refusing to transfer. My lawyer was present. He said, yes, Your Honor, I admit that we have received the money, so we prefer to transfer now, but we would like to have an order from the court. So the court gave the order. They took it to the registrar of lands. He said, that doesn't change the position. I am under orders from my superior. I will not transfer it until my superior tells me to. So they said, all right, here is the court order, here are the fees, and it's up to you whether you want to or not. Eventually, I presume that they had to agree and the transfer was made.
So did you get the full value?
About a quarter of what I could have sold it for. About a quarter of, before had I wanted to sell the property before the invasion, I would have sold for four times that amount. But was £15,000, but I could have sold it for much more. And in the house, among other things, we had some original paintings. And among other things, we had a Persian carpet, kashan, which 30 years ago, a carpet merchant offered to buy it from me for £2,000. That 30 years ago, and he was, of course, buying it in order to sell it. He would have made a profit. Today, I suppose it would be worth about £30,000, an original kashan Persian carpet. That was among the other things. Anyhow.
Well, Gaspar, thank you very much for telling me about your experiences, you know, in Palestine and Cyprus. Yeah. And it's lovely to be in your home and see what a wonderful home you've made, you know, having gone all through that and lost so
when
much.
We had to start from scratch again. We came here, so we had to do it. Astrid has a favorite saying. She compares the Armenians to spiders. She said, you can destroy the web of a spider, but the spider will build it again.
That's very appropriate, I think, in your case, isn't it? Thank you very much, Gaspar. Well,
it was a pleasure. It was a pleasure.